And it's a great privilege for me to interview Brother Ken, or rather spontaneous. And I was thinking that we have 91 years of Gyan between us. Not bad.
Really? Yeah, right.
And so... known you from when you were very young and used to be very skinny.
Yeah, I didn't used to eat.
Sorry?
I didn't used to eat at all.
And you have black hair, and I had a lot more hair than I have now as well. But it's been... Can you hear me all right? Oh, is that better? A bit better? Is that better if I eat the mic? But it's really been an amazing journey over these past 40-something years. I think we've both seen how the Yajna has changed, how things have expanded, and it's just amazing. I don't know what other words to use. And I think we're both very lucky that we've been, and many of you here, brought up and mentored by Daddy Janki. And I think we can't speak about our BK lives without speaking about Daddy, integral part. But do you remember, Ken, the first time you met Daddy? You know, Ken, the first Muralis that David and I had to study in Leeds, because there were no printed Muralis in English, were those files.
The gentleman's files?
Yeah, so we used to read from those every day.
So that gives you an idea how big the class was. Like just one or two sitting on either side of Sister Jenty looking over her shoulder, she wrote down on the floor. But anyway... I'd gone there, I think, just for some meditation, quiet time maybe. And I went to go up the stairs, and those stairs there, you can't have two people, one going up and one going down at the same time. So Daddy started to come down the stairs as I was going up, and of course I stopped and waited for her to come down. She stopped about the third or the fourth step, and she just, I don't know what drishti was, I thought she was just looking at me, you know, sort of intensely, and without even saying anything, she just said, "You will do Baba's service in the whole world." And that was the first thing she said to me. And I was mentioning today that I didn't know who Baba was or what service meant. I just sort of took it on board, and it seemed like that moment was I wanted to do something for the world, and that's why in fact I had come back to London. I felt that just by meditating on my own somewhere I wasn't being useful, so I wanted to come back and do something useful for the world.
Amazing beginning, because I remember the first word Sudesh Ben said to David and I was, would you like to meet God? Would you like to write a letter to God? You can, you know, no sort of hello, where are you from? Or do you think those were the methods those days, right? And today we have to, do you think we should go back to those methods?
People were like, our seniors were very much more direct. Yeah. Didn't beat around the bush, you know. They said things as they felt them, without any thought about, you know, should we say these things? Maybe the people will not understand them. That sort of reticence did not exist.
Yeah, it's true. I wanted to ask you, because I know you have a lot of love for Baba. Baba has a lot of love for you. But when would you say was your first real experience of Baba's love? When did that first come to you?
I think it was when I went to Madhuban the first time. Because I was only 3 months in Gyan. And I just... I remember arriving there, there were no other foreigners. And mostly they'd never seen a foreigner in Madhuban, so it was like a Martian walking across the courtyard.
So did you go, who'd been before you there?
Who'd been before me there, maybe...
Is it Nick and Madeline?
Nick and Madeline and...
John Kane, maybe.
No, I don't know about John.
Right.
But the
so.
Could be, and Denise, of course, that was about Denise. It, and Brother Surya from Germany.
Oh, yes, okay.
So about four or five people had been there.
Yeah.
And they said to me, go and sit in Baba's room. I said, okay, Baba's room, what's that? Because I was sort of picking up Gyan. It was like a process of just absorbing things rather than having done a formal course or anything. No one gave me a course. I just started straight without... First day in the center was the Muli.
Really?
Yeah.
So Sudeshti didn't give you the course?
No, she didn't.
Interesting.
She just told me to sit there.
So are you an unqualified teacher then? Or
yes. I haven't done the course until now. But maybe later on we did have a look at the course together in Oxford, one of the first programs there with Sister Denti. There was a group of us going through the lessons of the course in a very deep way.
That's a long time afterwards.
That was a long time afterwards.
Yeah. So how was that, you know, when we first went, I think you first went 75,
wasn't it?
Yeah, for me 76.
November 75, that was when I first went there.
So it was only a few years since Baba left. Right?
That's right.
And I know I used to get the feeling, or especially when I look back, that the daddies were doing everything to make us really feel like Sakura Baba was there. You know?
Oh, yeah. Well,
how did you do, what your memories of that?
Apparently nothing had changed since Baba left the body. I think what did change, the only thing that was new there was the museum that was being built. Just before Rama Baba left the body, right? But the actual complex of Pandav Bhavan was as it was when Baba was around. They hadn't made any sort of changes. And so the eating arrangements were on the floor. There wasn't a sort of a dining area that I remember.
We had a dining room the next year opposite the Tower of Peace, which
is
the storeroom.
That's right. They started to arrange things, some of the rooms there, with a few tables, that was it, right?
Yeah,
not many tables. Not many rooms even.
But 18th January was on the floor in the courtyard. That was.
And
So where did you sit on the floor? Was it in the courtyard? Was it paved by then?
No,
I don't think it was paved, was it?
We had some meals. Yeah, it would have been there or in the courtyard sometimes.
Okay.
I remember some meals in a building, but I can't remember which building. But it was like so simple, so royal, so pure. So the atmosphere. And when I went to Baba's room, I was sitting there, and I had the feeling Baba was welcoming me, and I felt, well, this is interesting. I guess it was like the picture of Brahma Baba was alive, you know, like we all have that sort of feeling. I said, well, what's going on here? It's an optical illusion or what? But it was like, welcome, welcome, welcome. You are much welcome here. That feeling of being received. And the next day, I remember there was a muli about the moths. So you look in a muli around Diwali, 75, you'll find this muli, I suppose. And Baba was saying there are three types of moths, you know, that famous muli, the ones that circle around, the ones that jump onto the flame, the ones that just circle around, and the ones that do a few rounds, go away and then come back again. And Baba asked, which sort of moth do you want to be? And I, of course, man, I want to be the first one. I want to jump onto the flame. And in that muli, actually, Baba said, and it was quite strange because who was translating was Dada Anand Kishore, and his English was like, you know, old, you know, dacoit's English. We saw it yesterday or the day before.
Very flowery.
It seems like they stopped teaching English when the British left there in the 1940s. They stopped advancing in the English. And so it was so funny, his translator was so hilarious. But anyway, and there was a phrase in the muli, Baba said, you have arrived at your destination, come in, sort of, don't stand hanging around at the gate sort of thing, but come in, you've arrived, your search is over. That was the muli. So I said, yeah, that's right. Exactly the experience that I'd had in Baba's room the previous day. So the next day I went back again to Baba's room, and it sort of, I had this feeling because I'd met Baba. They pushed me in front of Baba. So I didn't really have the desire because, you know, I feel too very shy, you know. Who am I? But
so how was that meeting, that first
and Baba
meeting?
Said Baba, they told Baba that I was going back to Australia.
Oh, I see, so you were on your way to Australia. I know I never met you in London, not you know,
no,
when
no,
I came.
No.
You've gone back.
I only stayed there for 3 months. Yeah, like we were coming every day to the class. But then I went back to Australia via India. And I told Baba I'm going back to Australia, and he said, well, you will do service there and you will bring a bouquet of souls back here to Madhavan. So again, I'm thinking, you know, I'm just smiling. I said, what's a bouquet of souls? What does that mean? You know, bouquet of souls? Come on. So I was just sort of smiling. I had no idea what was in store for me, because my feeling was, let me go to Australia. I know that they need hands. I know Sydney very well. So I will be able to help the sisters there very much. And
so who was there already in Australia?
Well, John Cain, he went there in April of 75. And he started a centre in Canberra. And it didn't prosper. So he tried his luck in Sydney, and he invited two Indian sisters to be there. And so Daddy G must have sent them. Didi Nimla was one of them. And Sister Suman, who later on went to Germany. So I was, you know, full of enthusiasm. I'd been away for 2 years, and by chance I'd lost contact with all of my friends at university, all of that sort of stuff. I had no idea where anyone was, and so that was useful. Even Didi, she'd said, don't contact your friends. That's how, when you say they were direct in those days, she just said straight off, don't contact your friends. I was 23. And I could understand that. I really didn't have much desire to anyway. So, but I could understand the importance of company. And that actually saved me in a way. This need to have company. The need to have company. And so John, I guess, maybe 10 days after I arrived, he came back to England via India. He took a couple of students from Australia with him, but subsequently I never saw them. You know, they went and came back and didn't know what happened to them. One of them is still in contact. And just about a week after that, 10 days after that, Suman was called to go to Germany to start things in Frankfurt. And about 10 days, 2 weeks after that, Didi Nemla said, we have to close the centre, I'm sorry. There are no one to support it, and my visa's run out, I'm leaving.
That was nice of him, wasn't it?
Yeah, you can imagine. My dream was shattered, that I wanted to help these people. And so I was just, I can't say shattered, that's not the word. I just, okay, what do I do? So my feeling was that I need to get something going.
What about your family? Just ask about your Lockick family when you went back.
They're very supportive, you know.
Oh,
my mum, when I was 15, she had a near-death experience. She was being operated on, and she had rare blood type, and they couldn't find her blood to give her a transfusion, so she died for 5 minutes.
Oh, for 5 minutes, okay.
And she, I mean, this was before all of those books came out, you know, Life After Life or whatever, I don't know, the near-death experience books. And she described exactly that. And so I was very curious, you know. I said, what do you mean, Mum, that you left the body? Who were you when you left the body? What does that mean? Whose eyes were you using to look at? She described everything. I was floating off into this beautiful light, and I looked back, and they're trying to resuscitate my body. But who were you looking at the body? And I was very, very curious. And the fact that started me to search. So my mum was always a bit sort of different after that experience.
Mm.
was never really religious, but very spiritual, even before. And she had a great influence over my dad, and they were very liberal, actually. I could do anything, actually. They had complete confidence in me.
Are they still around?
And even,
no.
But the whole thing of cooking also, I was a better cook than anyone in the house because I studied it. I worked in the kitchen laboratory for 5 years or something, so I had I had to learn everything about cooking so I could do the fancy dishes. And of course, any time there was anything at home, my mum would ask me to cook, so that wasn't a problem either.
Hey, do we have a cooking slot which evening? Yes, Rick?
So it was good. I learned everything about cooking, you name it. But anyway, so I had this, I just wrote to Daddy G, said, Daddy G, I'm starting a centre. Didn't ask for permission, I just said, I'm going to do it. Because in the beginning, those first few years, if you remember, Daddy Janky couldn't leave in London, right?
That's right.
So who was actually running the show? The whole show was Daddy G, right? So she was my...
She's your contact.
My senior was Daddy G.
Okay.
In fact, she became so curious about it that she wanted to... Charlie stayed on in London, right? I came back in November 75. He came back to Australia in March 77, so 18 months later. So he obviously had a much... He was here in the beginning of things in London much more than I was. I was sort of a phantom participant here. So I was, you know, we'd go to classes every day. But so Daddy G became so curious about this, you know, brothers, like Western brothers. It was the first non-Indian centre, actually, in the world, that one in Sydney. And Daddy G became curious, so she wanted to go there. So in her 77 world tour, 77. She made a point to stop it in Australia. So that was amazing, you know, amazing.
Was Charlie in Melbourne by then? He was still in Sydney?
Yeah, he came back and we had already started a little centre in Melbourne, so he went there to help. So, you know, he went straight to that. They just started, so it's as if he was there from the beginning also. And I remember we loaded up a car full of stuff and drove down the highway to Melbourne. We're going to start a centre.
Everything just...
Yeah, flowing. Just like that, you know. We had a lot of...
protocols.
We didn't even think about how or what or why, you know.
Yeah. Such a different time, isn't it?
It was a different time. Things... took off very quickly.
So how was it when Daddy G came? What happened then?
Well,
that must have been amazing. Jenty Ben was with her.
Jenty Ben and Ramesh Bhai.
And Ramesh Bhai.
Ramesh Bhai probably went to see if we were getting set up properly. You know, that was his job in those days. He did it in a lot of countries, actually.
Including UK.
Yeah, including
first
UK.
First place, yeah.
And... personally, I had no... I thought it was the most boring thing in the universe to give talks. You know, public talks. It probably still is, still the truth.
Why? Why is it boring?
No, I was more artistic. You know, I was more musically inclined.
Has everyone heard Ken's songs? I think everyone has.
So I wrote several musicals.
Musicals?
And they were full production type things.
Before Gyan or after Gyan?
No, this was after Gyan. In a way to get Baba's message across, I put it in the form of a musical. So there was dancing, singing, and acting.
Wow. Did it?
And for Daddy G's program in Sydney, yeah. We got the Great Hall of Sydney University, and there were first big program, 500 people. So it was like amazing, you know, because the whole cast were coming to class.
How many were in the cast?
Well, this was like the first year of service. We were doing things like that, and then we had already sort of, we were just rehearsing. So rehearsing was like a service program, you know, and we would meditate, and we would, in those days we meditated a lot more. Like, we would go up to the, you know, Sydney's a very beautiful city, right? One of the most beautiful cities in the world. And there are, what, four major inlets of water, like harbours, and in the city of Sydney, and there are four or five national parks in the city itself. So we would go to one of those national parks and watch the sun come up and meditate for hours, you know. That was like a standard Sunday morning program in 1976. Just watch the sun come up. And then we'd spend, you know, hours and hours rehearsing different things, and music and dancing and singing and acting and little bits, little skits.
So what was, it was
like an artistic centre.
What was the musical you put on for Daddy G? What was it called?
It was called The Dance of the Universe.
Oh, beautiful.
And, well, I wrote the songs, I wrote the music, I wrote the script, and I helped with the choreography too. All around there, yeah. So most of those souls became Brahmins, actually.
So we don't have any recording of that, do we? We didn't do that those days.
Maybe there is, but it's an old cassette tape somewhere. But it was pretty, we would do radio plays too, several radio plays.
Amazing.
So the whole thing, you know, we were not into giving public talks. So Daddy's visit was a major production, and she just conducted the long meditation at the beginning and at the end of the program. That was the program. And we had even a guy we wrote into the music. This great hall of the university is very gothic looking, you know. Sort of pseudo-gothic, because Sydney's not a gothic place, right? But this big hall looks like, you know, something from Oxford University or something. And they had a big pipe organ, you know, those ones. So the destruction scene in the play was a guy, you know, playing on that pipe organ. It was amazing. You know, people couldn't believe it. Of course, Daddy would say, who are these strange people, you know? And we were Brahmins, you know.
Who are these strange people? We were Brahmins. That's a good line.
And that went on for, you know, we did the same production in Melbourne when she was there too. I subsequently wrote a few. There was one actually that went on TV there.
Good heavens, we did not know that.
It was called the Gita episode.
TV celebrity.
Pardon?
We didn't know we had a TV celebrity in our
Well,
amazing.
It was, you know, we were courageous. I mean, who would think about it? I remember the radio show we did was so funny too, because it was just about, you know, was like an all night long radio play, the whole, and we selected all of these, you know, songs that had meaningful lyrics, and so the play was about in between the songs and a bit of interaction. And at one point we got the newsreader to say, if I can remember, that Russia had launched an attack on, I don't know where, in their GNC. And it doesn't look very good, but the guy was in the newscaster's voice. It sounded really authentic. And all of these people called the radio station, "What is happening?" They were in panic, you know. We sort of just wanted to call attention to the fact that things were sort of ending. It was part of the play, you know. Of course, then the acting, oh, wow. They also reacted to the news, but the news was a news guy. We were very daring.
I was going to say very naughty, but okay, daring.
Naughty, yeah, naughty and daring.
Amazing.
I haven't ever been really an orthodox type of person, so.
Okay, so, well, I hadn't heard all of that before, so that's really nice. So then, Brazil happened what year? 1980 or something?
1979.
Okay, quite early.
So I was in Australia for 4 years, that's it.
Then Brazil. You were ordered to Brazil.
Ordered, yeah.
And did you have any thoughts? You know, I'm leaving behind A, B, C, X, Y, Z. Or you just...
No,
you'd jumped into the frame and so... Okay, wherever Baba says.
Even when Daddy G went to Australia in 77, I had a really good job, right? And even when she was there, and this is something I never forget, I had a chance to get a promotion, but it would mean more time away from the centre. And I asked Daddy, look, I've got this chance for a promotion. I thought, wow, I can earn more and so I can help the centre more. And she said, who told you that you have to look after the centre? It's not your responsibility, it's Baba's. Because if you had that thought that you were going to do it, you're occupying the space that others could maybe create their fortune. Better you don't take this job. Better you just serve the souls there. And by serving the souls there, they will look after the... It's not your concern, she said. And that was a lesson that from that moment on, I never worried about how things were going to run.
It's amazing, you know, sometimes these are things that you can't learn by reading, or, you know, they have to happen in the moment and you have to realize it, right?
I said that experience because when the idea came, there was a brother who had actually, I'd made the contact with. Genty Ben had to give a talk at a Hatha Yoga conference in near Pune. And so she took a few brothers with her. It was me, Robert Forbes and Aidan. And we went there and we were giving courses at the time. She was sort of making contacts, but we were giving meditation courses on the side. And the group that stayed was with me was from Brazil. And three of them, I subsequently from there, I convinced them to visit Mount Abu. So I sort of dragged them up to Madabar with me. And then, of course, we lost contact. This was in 77. And subsequently, one of those, he wrote to... this was a couple of years later, 79. He wrote to the headquarters and said, I'm prepared to put someone up for 3 months if you can send someone. And I don't know if they made the connection, but certainly in those days there were very few foreigners that had experience of getting things going. So Daddy said, would you like to go? And Didi, both of them were together.
Daddy G
and Didi Mama, both together, they called me. and Sister Jenty was translating, and then because of that previous experience, you know, it's not my responsibility if the top people are saying, are making the invitation, it's because Baba's already sorted things out, I'm not going to worry about anything. So if the invitation is there, let me do it. Why not? So I didn't have one thought, not one thought about how am I going to work, what am I going to do for money, I don't speak the language, nothing like that, nothing like that.
Amazing.
Just that Baba, if he thinks that I can do it, means I can do it. So.
That's really amazing, isn't it? Well done. And that's why Baba chose you, and that's why Baba sent you, because that's a level of faith, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's like,
call it
for
faith,
us, faith is not belief, it's experience. Yeah.
Faith is experience. That's very important.
So then I had such a good job, so this was also, I didn't think about it, but I went back to Australia after coming from Madaban. I worked for 2 months and I had enough money to buy a ticket to go to South America.
It's a long way.
In two months, and I arrived there with $200. That was it. It was an interesting experience because I wanted to have a look around first. So I went to Colombia and I organized some programs in Bogota. Through context of Maria, she was one of the first students in Sydney. This sister who was a diplomat, she was the consul of Colombia in Australia in Sydney.
She's living in Madaban now.
She's living in Madaban. So
yeah.
She gave me some context, and I went down by land bus. I went down to Ecuador, organized a few things in Guayaquil, and then I went to Lima, organized some things in Lima. It's like going to someone, yeah, look, I'm so and so, would you like for me to have a program? That was how it was, right?
Yeah, people just, but I think in South America in particular, even though it's Catholic, right?
Yeah.
Very, but people don't seem to have a narrow-mindedness there.
No, they don't.
Think?
Well, that's because of the three main influences: the African influence through the slaves, the indigenous influence. Actually, there are four influences. There's also spiritualism, very big. Like they believe in reincarnation and stuff. So an average Catholic in Brazil will go to the African thing on Wednesday, go to the spiritualist session on the Thursday, and go to church on the Sunday. So they mix it up, you know. So very open. So I arrived, I went to Bolivia and then to Brazil. And when I arrived in Brazil, they had a small place set up.
Brilliant.
But people were not particularly interested in anything except having a place to go after work to relax. So it didn't work for them.
Mm. So I know the first two main instruments were Luciana and Goody.
Yeah.
And of course Goody passed, she left the body. But how did all that happen?
Well,
because it's not just that they came to Baba, but they became,
really,
and Luciana still is,
major,
obviously,
even before,
absolutely main instruments.
Even before Luciana, there was some other woman. She really helped a lot in the first 6 months. Luciana was still finishing her studies at university. So she wasn't helping so much in the first few months. But then I had to go back to Sydney because my Lockie brother was killed in a road accident.
Oh, sorry.
And my parents were completely shattered. He was only 19.
Oh, your Lockie brother?
Lockie brother, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So the same year that I went to Brazil, in April, in May I arrived. In October, I went back to Australia. So I left things, and the one who was mainly helping was a brother and Luciana. And when I came back in February, I stayed away from October to February, so I went to Madaban on my way back. And when I got back, everything was still flowing nicely, but Luciana had taken up the challenge.
Interesting.
More than anything. So it was
meant to be.
Yes.
And then Sister Jenty came. When did she come for her first visit?
The first time she went there was in 1980.
1980. And there was a group of sisters to meet her, right?
There was a group of sisters already.
Something special about their attire, I remember, of getting this news.
This is a myth. They said that I taught them how to tie their saris. I did not. I don't even know how to do it. So that's a complete myth.
Because we got this news in London that Jenty Benz arrived there and there's all these sisters in their white saris, but they're tied the wrong way round.
They probably looked it up in a book somewhere.
So this was big news. Just like we got big news, I remember, when Dadiji was in Australia. Dadiji has eaten spinach pie. This is big news that came back to London.
He's what?
Has eaten spinach pie.
Okay.
This is a big news, came back to London, and then this big news of the saris the wrong way round.
Well, the cooking was, you know, pretty well, in those first years in Australia, I was the cook too, so.
I bet it was good. So then, so a whole army grew up in Brazil. So that was something. What else I want to ask
you?
Well,
I mean, it's a completely different track to here, because in the whole of Latin America, there's only one Bharatwasi, one. And that's Daddy Jenky's nephew.
Okay.
They're not even Bharatwasis, never even went to that part of the world. You know, just maybe a few hundred families in the whole of Brazil. So we don't see Bharatwasis. They don't turn up, they don't come. There are no contacts, so everything had to... We had to, let's say... We have to take into account the culture there, right? Because it's not that we change gyan, but we don't highlight certain things which are irrelevant. But the whole thing of God and the soul and karma, that's relevant for everyone. But the cycle also has a story, but they can't really relate to deities and stuff.
Okay. So that's so introducing the Murli, you then have to go carefully with that.
Yeah, go carefully, but it's like,
I suppose it's
the
about
whole
where
thing
you
of service
emphasis.
Is to serve the soul spiritually and not to serve them with ideas.
Okay.
And so if people are feeling that their spiritual needs are being satisfied, they'll continue, they'll come. Then slowly they become familiar with Brahmin jargon and stuff.
Okay, now that's a very good distinction, important distinction.
There's one thing we can't do in those very strongly Catholic countries. We can't repeat, you know, like the spiritual children. We can't do it because it sounds too much like the Catholic Mass. You know, the priest says something and everyone just repeats him. So we can't do it. We just do what Dadiji used to do. She never did it, actually.
No, that came much later on. You know, this response...
Dadiji would just say, namaste, namaste, namaste. That was it.
I don't remember when and how that whole thing of responding came in.
I think it was Daddy Janky.
Maybe. I don't know.
Seems like her.
Possibly.
We used to think when she said three Om Shantis, we thought it was because she was deaf. And she couldn't hear the first response to Om Shanti, right?
Well, I mean, she also was, but I don't think that was the reason for the preemption.
But you know, a lot of the practices that we take for granted were actually just innovations along the way, like traffic control and world meditation hour and stuff like that.
That all came later on.
Even the double foreigners, the first 10 years, Baba never said the word double foreigner. He started to use that in the 80s. We were just foreigners. That was it. Right?
Yeah. And then, but what was interesting is that it's become like a name, you know, it's become an identity, double foreigners. We use it officially now, don't we?
But I remember that Baba gave us so much attention that the Bharatvasis became a little bit jealous.
This is true.
Because Baba gave so much attention to those first foreigners. Unbelievable.
Huge. Huge.
I think I remember once Baba sat with me for 20 minutes. Just, you know. And it was amazing. It's amazing how Baba knows things too. I mean, much later on, it must have been, Mark Fourcade was still around and his son had just committed suicide. When was that about? That would
it's
have
a
been
a while ago now.
2000, near 2000 more or less. And so it was in the days when we would file past Bap Dada and just get drishti, right? You know, and not everyone, just someone who had a ribbon, right? Sometimes I gave my ribbons away, you know, because people, who knows, right? You go, I've already been so many times. You go, I put people with my ribbon there. But as I walk past Baba, Baba's told me stop. I thought,
what have I done?
What has happened? What have I done? And he said, come closer. What he wanted is, he said, go and find some of your friends and bring them back at the end. That's what Baba told me. Mm. Okay. So he sort of, you know, it was like a bit of a, it's like the exit of a football game. Behind the stage there, right? So much confusion. So rapidly I sort of found a few, like Anthony, both Anthonys, Charlie was there and a few others. And one of the people that I called was Mark. Mark Foucault, he was from France.
One of the foundations of
French service.
And he used to work with Brian Bacon closely.
Yeah.
SML. Yeah.
Yeah, we did this SML bit for a while, the three of us. And so one of them was Mark. And in fact, it seemed like the whole thing was arranged so that Baba could talk to Mark. Because Baba, we got told, Baba said something to all of us, and then he called Mark, and somebody explained to Baba that his son had committed suicide. So Baba gave so much love to Mark, and he was so much, you know, all of that pain was taken away. It's very hard to lose a son through suicide, I can imagine. So he was, the whole thing was Baba arranging so that he could talk to Mark. That's what it seemed like.
A real father,
yeah.
I think it's incredible, the feeling those days, and I don't know what you think, but I feel it's still the case. But Baba was so intimately involved with us, you know, with our lives.
Yeah.
And do you feel that now, from the subtle region, Brahma Baba is still intimately involved with us?
I think it's absolutely essential for any Brahmin to have a very, very deep heart-to-heart conversation with Baba regularly. Because even though he's not meeting us anymore, it's the same Baba. and he knows the same. And if I'm tuned and I'm not putting ideas into my own head, but I'm really open for Baba's touchings, I will get those touchings, because Baba knows what each and every one of us are going through. So I should be open for those touchings, and not just, you know, we say putting words into someone's mouth, we put thoughts in our own heads and call them from Baba. No, Baba doesn't necessarily agree with us.
How do you tell the difference?
Pardon?
How do you tell the difference? How can you be sure?
Well, it seems immediately that it's the right thing to do.
Sorry? Say again?
It seems immediately that it's the right thing to do. And it seems immediately that people, if it's something that involves others, they will cooperate easily. And they will agree, whatever it is. And so it becomes quite easy to recognize what Baba wants us to do and what our own ego wants us to do. And this is probably the proof of our surrender, right? That I'm actually doing something what Baba wants me to do, and I'm not doing something that I just want to do. Never.
If you think about your relationship with Baba, you know, 1975, those early days, and your relationship with Baba now, how do you feel it's evolved, or has it changed, or and what have been the factors?
There's definitely, but Baba's still the same Baba, that's one thing. So, I mean, I guess the depth of the Baba makes us very wise over time, and everything just seems to flow and flow and flow easier. Everything is getting easier. Even though it's becoming more complex, it's actually becoming easier. Because it is not my responsibility.
That's a wonderful mantra to take away, isn't it? Okay, just one last question. I know we're getting close to our time. But I remember once you saying, I think maybe it was in an RC meeting or somewhere, I've taken the decision to only have happiness. So how has that worked for you? Do you remember that?
No.
Oh. Well, I remember it touched me very deeply.
It seems something that I would say.
That I'm only going to choose happiness.
That's
something
right.
Like that, yeah.
It seems like I know what is, who am I and who everyone else is. And nothing from anyone else is mine. Nothing.
Explain that a bit more. Patrice is asking.
Well, each one is playing their own role. If they want to be distributors of confusion or sorrow, I'm not in the market. This is their problem, not mine. So I tend to have more compassion rather than judgment. Very difficult to get me to criticize someone. For example, but people come to me with stories, I say, well, wait a minute, but that soul has this and this and this and this. You probably won't find anyone in Brazil who has heard me tell bad stories about someone else. You won't find them.
That's very good.
So,
it's a very good chart.
Nothing of others is mine.
Thank you. I know it's 8:30, but is there a burning question anyone would like to ask Ken from the audience, from the congregation, from the family? Audience, a funny word.
It's okay. Don't force yourselves.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much. You've told us your story and a lot of detail, but also, given us the dharana that's enabled it along the way, which is really, really useful. And you just see why Baba chose you, what Baba has done, and Baba's miracle through you. Would you agree?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for being our big brother.
Pardon?
Thank you for being our big brother.
Thank you for being my big family.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. Let's have Baba's remembrance. Mm-hmm.